So this morning we're going to hear a little bit from Sri Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhava by Bhakti Vikash Swami. He did some extensive study on the life and the history of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj. So we're going to take some of his writings and then refer to a couple of other books. In the course of looking into this, there is so much information about Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj. Just a storehouse. And we wouldn't have enough time to do or say everything. So we just kind of went through various aspects of it. The early life of Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj. What he was like. Just so that we can get a little bit of an understanding of his history, his character. What kind of individual he was. What kind of a great Vaishnavacharya that he was. And still is today. And then a foremost incident is when Srila Prabhupada met Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. Very unique. This is why we're here today. That wonderful meeting where Srila Prabhupada met his spiritual master. And from that point on, Srila Prabhupada absorbed or imbibed the instruction of his spiritual master, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. And that's why we have this temple here today. In Los Angeles, California, a long way away from Sridham Mayapur, little hut in Mayapur, little village, and all of a sudden here we are in the metropolitan city of Los Angeles and practicing Krishna consciousness. It's amazing that you can be in the city of Los Angeles doing what we're doing now, get on an airplane, and 22 hours later, you can land in Sridham Mayapur, do the same thing. This is the potency of the Krishna conscious movement and the potency of the Parampara system coming down from Lord Krishna to present Srila Prabhupada, and how they have been able to imbibe and spread this science of Krishna consciousness untinged. Same it was thousands and thousands of years ago. And this is the potency, the power of the Parampara system. And we ourselves as devotees, if we surrender to that, if we actually hear the message and we surrender to the message and we broadcast the message of Krishna consciousness as we heard it, as we've been taught, or as we're reading in these wonderful literatures, Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, if we take that instruction and without any addition or subtraction, and speak this message, you'll have the power to continue on. This is what's most important. Whatever great souls like Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj has done, or His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada, it was for the future. It was always for the future. Not just the present, but the future. And this is what these great acharyas live for. They live for the spreading of the message of Lord Krishna for the future generations, and to enlighten the conditioned souls of how they can get out of this material existence. And so we see that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, along with his father, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in some respects we consider Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur to be the father of the inauguration of the Krishna consciousness movement. He made this prediction, and the prediction came true. We'll read a little bit about that prediction this morning. A very potent prediction in terms of the spreading of Krishna consciousness, and how Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur said that one day there will be devotees in Russia, there will be devotees in the most, you know, forbidden parts of the world, so to speak. And there the message of Krishna consciousness is being broadcast, like in China today. It's being broadcast in Russia. It's being broadcast different places around the world, which are more or less forgotten. And all of a sudden, there's a devotee there taking the instruction from the Parampara. And by that instruction, the potency exists. Whatever we're doing here, the reason there's any potency in Krishna consciousness is because We're taking the instruction of the spiritual master, and we're trying to say the same thing, and in that way, it has potency. Just like when we go out and preach, distribute Prabhupada's books, when we have full faith in the instruction given within these books and the order of the spiritual master, the potency is there. We see that we can distribute so many literatures. And this is the process, faith, shraddha. Faith is a very important ingredient. And when we read here about Prabhupada meeting his spiritual master, faith. Faith was a very important aspect of that association, that meeting. Prabhupada had faith in the instruction of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. He heard so many sadhus speak and make so many comments. But until he met his spiritual master, who was a bona fide representative of the message of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, only then did he realize the difference between just a sadhu or a great yogi compared to a great Vaishnava, a great devotee of the Lord, a bhakta of Lord Krishna. So this is our legacy in terms of spreading the Krishna consciousness movement. We have to have this faith. Even in a mundane level, if you take the mundane world and you have some mundane guru of the material world for material success, unless you have faith in that person's instruction, very difficult to become successful. There's so many gurus there. There's financial gurus. There's, educational gurus, wizards. And, there's so many in history. We know there's so many, but there's a few that are very pronounced, renowned. And a materialist would love to be in that association and get that instruction, the secret of success in life. And that secret, that instruction, that secret will not be potent unless one has faith in that instruction. And then if one has faith in that instruction, then it can be potent. So similarly in Krishna consciousness, we can read the Bhagavatam, the Bhagavad Gita, the pastimes of Srila Prabhupada, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. But if there's no faith, there's no genuine faith, then it's very difficult to understand. Very difficult, almost impossible. So faith is a very powerful ingredient in terms of being successful in the execution of Krishna consciousness. And that's what's so amazing reading Prabhupada's story, how he came over on a Jaladuta. Because of intense faith in the instruction of his guru, he put his life on the line, getting in a boat, a steamer, a cargo ship. And that cargo, who knows that cargo ship, seeing pictures of that cargo ship, I don't know if I could get into that cargo ship. I don't know if I'd have the strength to even get on that ship. And what to speak of, we don't know what if the captain was, you never know if the captain really was, trained as a captain. You don't know. I only say that because in this modern time, we were in India, and I happened to pick up a newspaper, and I read there that there were some pilots that were flying, some of the jets in India, and they were never trained as pilots. They found that these people never even trained, and they were flying and landing airplanes in India, and I might have been on one of those flights. And then I was thinking, this is too much. A few days later, after the newspaper did a further research, they found out that they had started schools, pilot training schools that weren't real. And they were just giving out diplomas for several thousand rupees. And then they got a diploma to be a pilot. And they were taking that diploma and they were trying to get a job as a pilot. So what to speak of the Jaladuta? We don't know what. We have no idea, just to make a case in point. And Srila Prabhupada got on that particular boat and came to America, had a couple of heart attacks, landed in New York without a penny, literally, $8. I mean, this is like amazing. And what was it based on? Faith. Faith in the instruction of his spiritual master. And this is what carried him. So when we read this, a very esoteric, very deep interaction between guru and disciple. And these are not ordinary individuals. So I just wanted to kind of give that as a pretext, because we're not reading about just a mundane individual here. This is about a great soul who came for the purpose of spreading Krishna consciousness. And they're not ordinary. Ordinary meaning that, you know, like Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, from very childhood, he was a potent preacher already. And everything that happened in his life was very significant in terms of the future that he was going to bring to this Krishna conscious movement. Very, very significant. Okay, so I'll read a few things here about Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. I'm going to kind of skip around a little bit, because, you know, this is like the early life, and then he meets his spiritual master, Srila Gaurakishore Das Babaji, and then Srila Prabhupada. So these are all significant pastimes for us to try to inculcate, so that we can get a feeling of what this Krishna conscious movement is about. It's a bona fide movement. It's not something new, by the way. This is not new. We'll be reading here that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta comes from a lineage all the way to Lord Brahma. All the way to Lord Brahma. There's a lineage. Different generations. That's how far back it goes. And so all of a sudden we've been put into this lineage just by coming in contact with Srila Prabhupada. Just like we went to Sri Balaji temple, and there they were asking, what is your gotra? You know, what is your past? Where are you from? What is your gotra? And we said, Achyuta. He goes, Acha. We said, from the Achyuta gotra. You know, in Western society, you don't have a gotra. Yeah, you can say Malecha, I guess. Or Yavana Malecha. But it was kind of cool. And they asked you, what is your gotra? So the Prabhu that was with the devotee that was our guide, he said, Achyuta. And then the priest said, Jai. And then he went in front of Balaji and said our names, and Achyuta Gotra. So that was really, very ecstatic. So now we're put into this. You can see just by how is it possible that we are put in this particular circumstance where our lineage goes all the way back to Lord Brahma, the creator of this universe. Pretty amazing. And this is incredible. This is how this Krishna conscious movement will really spread, because it's predicted by these amazing personalities who come from a lineage which is the creator of this material world. Amazing, huh? Okay. I'll read a little bit about Bhaktivinoda Thakur here, and then it gets right into Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur had resuscitated Gaudiya Vaishnavism from a three-century gloom, during which it had come to the practice to be practiced largely in a superficial manner, much removed from the genuine process grounded in scriptural regulations, and had been so severely misrepresented by rogues and charlatans that most educated and discerning persons wanted nothing to do with it. Nearly all who deemed themselves Vaishnavas were followers of diverse Appa Sampradayas, whose butchering of Lord Chaitanya's teachings functioned on exploitation of misplaced sentiments. The severely corrupted forms of Vaishnav Dharma gave a cloak of religious piety to various forms of sexual perversity that otherwise could have not prospered in the social climb of that era. Thus, in popular parlance, the designation Vaishnava had come to denote ignorance and dissolutionness. The remaining few genuine devotees were either householders or reclusive babajis who shunned bad association and did not attempt to reform others. So in essence, in this particular time, The Vaishnavas were, you know, practicing rasa dances and having sexual relations with women and using that as their power of being able to seduce so many innocent persons. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur was different. He not only recognized the superlative value of real Gaudiya Vaishnavism, but uncovered, rejuvenated, propagated, and defended the authentic teachings and practices of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. While some educated and religiously committed Hindus of his generation were inspired by their new intercourse with the West to promote Hindu values and teachings to the people thereof, and some Gaudiyas opined that the fulfillment of Lord Chaitanya's prophecy of global Sankirtan was nigh, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur took up the practical task of scrutinizing the theories of these thinkers in the light of Gaudiya theology, thereby presenting Mahaprabhu's message in a radically new and opposite context. He longed for and foresaw events that others might have considered fanciful dreams. This is what Bhaktivinoda's thoughts were. The Dharma preached by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is universal and not exclusive. The principle of Kirtan as the future church of the world invites all classes of men without distinction of caste or clan to the higher cultivation of the spirit. This church, it appears, will spread worldwide and replace all sectarian churches which exclude outsiders from the precincts of the mosque, church, or temple. Lord Chaitanya did not advent himself to liberate only a few men in India. Rather, his main objective was to emancipate all living entities of all countries throughout the entire universe and to propagate the eternal Dharma. Lord Chaitanya states in Sri Chaitanya Bhagavat, quote, "In every town, country, and village my name will be sung," end of quote. There is no doubt that this unquestionable order will come to pass. Although there is still no pure society of Vaishnavas, Lord Chaitanya's prophetic words will in a few days come true, I am sure. Why not? Nothing is absolutely pure in the beginning. From imperfection, purity will come about. Very soon, the unparalleled path of Harinam Sankirtan will be propagated all over the planet. Or for that day, when the fortunate English, French, Russian, Prussian and American people will take up banners, mridangas, and kartals and perform kirtan through their streets and towns. When will that day come? Oh, for the day when the Western fair-skinned men from one side, while chanting Jai Sachinandana, Ki Jai, will extend their arms and, embracing the devotees of our country coming from another side, treat us with brotherly feelings. When will that day be? Oh, such a day, they will say. Oh, dear Aryan brothers, we have taken shelter at the lotus feet of Lord Chaitanya, who is the ocean of transcendental love. Kindly embrace us. End of quote. When will that day come? That day will witness the holy transcendental Vaishnava Prema to be the only Dharma. And like rivers meeting the ocean, all narrow creeds will mix with the unlimited Vaishnava Dharma. When will that day come? Wow. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur ki jai. Isn't that amazing? This is predicted. And, you know, what was this, maybe 100 years ago? Something like that. I don't know exactly. In that area. This was predicted by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Okay, we'll continue. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's promotion of the pure original teachings of Lord Chaitanya had made some headway in bringing its prediction closer to fruition. So, as we say here, the promotion of pure original teachings with faith. Still, his longing for East and West to unite in Krishna Bhakti might have seemed merely quinoxic. I don't know what that word is. Then one night, in a dream, Lord Jagannath told Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, "I didn't bring you to Puri to execute legal matters, but to establish Vaishnav Siddhanta." Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur responded, "Your teachings have been significantly deprecated, and I lack the power to restore them. Much of my life has passed and I am otherwise engaged. So please, you send someone from your personal staff so that I can start this movement. End of quote. Lord Jagannath directed him to pray to the deity of Bimala Devi. In this way, just as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had appeared in response to the call of Sri Advaita Prabhu, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati was sent by Lord Chaitanya to fulfill the prayers of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Even before Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati's advent, his great-grandfather had predicted from his deathbed that an extraordinary sadhu would take birth in Srila Bhaktivinoda's house. Now, just a little history. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur was a magistrate, and he was living in Puri and being the administration for the Puri temple. So he had a lot of power there, and he tried to rectify a lot of different irregularities at the temple. A lot of things were going on, and he actually straightened out this particular temple and the pandits. And of course, in the course of doing that, he didn't become very popular. And we'll see how, by his desire, as we read here, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta came to help. An astrologer commissioned to calculate the natal chart declared that the newborn's body possessed all 32 symptoms of an exalted personage, as delineated in the scripture. So they were. This is a description of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. The five large parts are the nose, arms, chin, eyes, and knees. The five fine parts are the skin, fingertips, teeth, hair on the body, and hair on the head. The seven red parts are the eyes, the soles, the palms, palate, nails, and upper and lower lips. The six raised parts are the chest, the shoulders, nails, nose, waist, and mouth. The three small parts are the neck, the thighs, and male organ. The three broad parts are the waist, the forehead, and chest. The three grave parts are the navel, the voice, and existence. The astrologer further averred, I have done many horoscopes in my life, but have never before seen one replete with all the signs of an eminent personality. This child will become world famous as a teacher of the ultimate goal of life. Jai. We'll go on a little bit more. The boy was the sixth child in a family of 13, the fourth of eight sons, and third by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's second wife, Srimati Bhagavati Devi. Given the name Bimala Prasad, he was often called simply Bimala, or Bimu, or Binu, variants thereof. In accordance with Bengali customs, his younger brothers addressed him as Nada, or fourth brother. Okay, so here I'm just going to read a little bit about the lineage, as we mentioned before. Traditionally, high-class Indian families retained an oral record of their lineage going back to Lord Brahma, the first created being in the universe. After Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Tirobhava, his was published in an article about him in Sajjana Toshani, the spiritual journal he had founded. Could I get some water? That might help me. I don't know where the cup is, but yes, thank you. According to the belief and judgment of the illustrious Hindu family lines, those descending from Brahma via the progeny of Chitragupta were celebrated in Bharat Varsha as Brahma Kayastas. Bharata was in the 87th generation from Chitragupta, and Bhardwaj in the 88th. After him came Angira and then Brihaspati. In the 149th generation, Purushottama, son of Shivadatta, went to Bengal upon the summons of King Adisura of Bengal. Purushottam's youngest son accepted sannyas with the name Kanaka Dandi. His composition, Saragrahi Vaishnava Mahimastaka, is extant even today. In the seventh and eighth generations of Purushottam's family, both Vinayaka and his son Narayana Datta were royal ministers. In the 15th generation from Purushottam appeared the son of Kamadeva, named Raja Krishnananda, who had an exceedingly pronounced taste for the holy name. Accompanied by his entourage, Sri Nityananda Prabhu came to the home of Raja Krishnananda and bestowed mercy upon him. The 7th generation from Krishnananda saw the appearance of Madan Mohan, whose piety was so famed that it is recommended to remember him in the morning. He was venerated by all the residents of Bengal, especially all respectable persons of Calcutta. He fostered the prestige of Vanashram Dharma by establishing temples and other such structures in Banaras and similar holy places, by having bodies of water excavated in many locations, and by constructing the steps at the Preta Shila in Gaya. The generosity and prosperity of his eldest son, Ramatanu, was in recent days spoken of in every home in Calcutta. A great-grandson of Madan Mohan was Ananda Chandra Dutta, who gave his third son, our Thakur, the name Kedaranath. So this is how far back we go. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur has appeared in 1838 as the most distinguished descendant of a lineage that was already renowned for both worldly and religious merit. With the advent of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati, the family line became even further enhanced. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati was certainly not an ordinary mortal belonging to a particular race or caste. He was neither Bengali, Indian, nor Kayasta, but a resident of Vaikuntha, come to exhibit the character of the spiritual world and reclaim fallen souls. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj ki jai. So that was a little bit of history. So now we'll read a little bit of further history of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. Just a little bit more. We might go a little bit longer because we don't eat breakfast today anyway, right? So we might go a little bit longer. So please stay. It would be nice to hear about Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. As I was reading this, I was myself even getting just amazed how the personality of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. It was just, you couldn't stop reading this. I was reading and reading and reading, and I got carried away, and I forgot what I was supposed to do, so I had to like stop and back up and remember that I need to just say something here this morning. This is about the incident with the Ratyatra carts. From the wonderful happening on Lord Jagannath's cart, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur realized that this child was Lord Chaitanya's answer to his prayer for an empowered soul to help in his mission. He thus resolved to specially care for this son, and from the beginning trained him in pure devotional service. When Srila Bhaktisiddhanta was only 10 months old, his mother brought him by palanquin to Ranganath in Nadia district, Bengal, where he spent in early years. Bimala, or Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, was not more... Bimala was his given name at birth. Bimala was not more than 4 years old when an incident occurred that foretold the character of this future acharya. He took a mango before it had been offered to the family Govardhan Srila, for which Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur rebuked him. All food is to be enjoyed by the Lord. Nothing should be taken unless first offered to Krishna. You have committed a serious offense. The child became greatly contrite and immediately vowed to never again eat mangoes. In later years, after he had become an acknowledged spiritual leader, he was often offered mangoes, but he always refused, saying, "I am an offender." And quoted, "Everything within the universe is controlled and owned by the Lord. Therefore, one should accept only those things necessary for himself, which are set aside as his quota, and should not accept other things, knowing well to whom they belong." So this is something there. So this is the cart, Ratyatra festival, the cart festival incident. Bimala was 5 months old at the time of Lord Jagannath's Rath Yatra, an annual festival attracting lakhs of pilgrims. His father's house was situated along the parade route on Grand Road. Although the procession usually finishes in a few hours, this time Lord Jagannath's cart stopped for 3 days outside the home of his dear devotee, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. During that period, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur arranged for a continuous Sankirtan festival for the pleasure of Lord Jagannath. Taking advantage of the auspicious opportunity, he directed his wife to bring her baby to the cart. Upon being placed at the lotus feet of Lord Jagannath, the infant reached out his tiny arms to touch the feet of the deity. Lord Jagannath immediately reciprocated by offering his own garland, which fell from his body and encircled the child. The same day, Bimala's Anna Prashana, the function of eating grains for the first time, was conducted with Lord Jagannath's Mahaprasad. Also performed was the traditional ceremony of placing the baby amid various objects such as rice paddy, money, and scriptures to see which one he will clasp as indicating of his future vocational propensity. The child's spontaneous grasping of Srimad Bhagavatam further intimated his devotional inclination. So we have a couple of more things here, just to give a little bit of a history. Bimala was clearly not an ordinary boy. He had exceptional ability to remember and comprehend all kinds of topics. His voracious reading and his ability to exactly recall passages he had read only once were to earn him the epithet Living Encyclopedia. Even in his last days, he could reproduce verbatim any part of any book he had read 50 years back. His genius was accompanied by a gravity and intensity of purpose uncommon at such a tender age. Like Prahlad Maharaj and other great child devotees before him, Bimala did not waste time in frivolous sports or similar nugatory diversions. From the beginning, he was absorbed in fulfilling the mission of human life and spontaneously attracted to Krishna Bhakti. Sri Bihari Das Babaji, the personal servant of Sri Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj, described young Bimala. I often saw Srila Bhaktisiddhanta in his childhood in Calcutta at the house of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur whenever I visited there with Babaji Maharaj. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta would wear only a pullover shirt. He struck me as having a serious nature. I was attracted by his effulgence and learning. He was always attracted to the holy name. In his earlier years, his frame was very lean. Babaji Maharaj loved him dearly. So, some more things here. Just due to time, I'll try to skip a few things that I wanted to read. Bimala was being recognized as a nascent genius. Delighting in debates on many diverse subjects, his masterly command of knowledge and insight rendered him nigh undefeatable. And although generally respectful and polite toward his mentors, as was the norm in those days, he was so dedicated to truth that he could not brook any misleading statements or misrepresentations of fact in any field, and did not hesitate to expose inefficiencies in opposing positions, even if presented by honorable superiors. So here is an incident. Mr. Little was a mathematics teacher assigned to teach physics to Bimala's class. He would read from the textbook 3 times and say, I think all of you can understand this. He kept a list of the first 3 students' names and, looking at the list, would ask questions. One day, outside of class, he questioned some students about the teachings of the Bible, knowing that most of them disliked having to learn it. But only Bimala was bold enough to pipe up. In your scripture prayers, like, give us our daily bread, resemble the outlook of the Vidya Shaktayas in this country. The Supreme Lord is the object of devotion, not the servant of us who have turned from Him. Those who take His name, wanting Him to serve them, have no devotion in their hearts. This is how critical Srila Bhaktisiddhanta was in terms of inaccuracies or something against bhakti or devotional service. Okay, we'll move on. I'll try to read a few more of the things. One thing I should say is that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj, in terms of his character, he in his adulthood, he was known as Nrisinga Guru. And because he was so powerful that whenever anybody brought up any kind of Mayavad philosophy, immediately he would want to debate or to cut down or break down Mayavad philosophy. And it says that when he would walk the streets, that when he would walk down the sidewalk, if there was a Mayavadi sannyasi that saw him coming, immediately they would go across the street and they would avoid him, because immediately as soon as Bhaktisiddhanta would see that person, he would get into a confrontation and debate and try to completely eradicate their Mayavad philosophy. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta was very strict in that sense, and we can see that this was from his childhood. Okay, during school holidays, Sri Siddhanta Saraswati studied the Vedas under Pandit Pritishvishvar Sharma, who also tutored him in the grammatical work Siddhanta Kumudi. Sri Siddhanta Saraswati went through the entire grammar in 3 months, covering this section on Sunday in 3 days. Pandit Sharma cautioned, "You should not finish the perusal of Sunday so quickly. It took me a long time." In Banaras, scholars go through the Panini's grammar during their whole life. Whoever continuously studies Panini attains liberation upon dying. Sri Siddhanta Saraswati replied, "Then from today, I reject you. The goal of my life is neither mastery of grammar nor liberation, but worship of Hari and attaining His affection. I have studied the Vedas, the branches of the Vedas, and their cannot parts only in a secondary manner." So this means that he simply rejected his teacher because his teacher wasn't teaching the ultimate goal of life. So you can imagine how Srila Bhaktisiddhanta was so revolutionary that in those days, at such a ripe young age, he even rejected his own teachers. Okay, one last paragraph here. In terms of his youth, it says here that Pandit Panchanana was elderly, the head of the astronomy department at the Sanskrit college, and reputed as the greatest astronomer in Bengal. But he was outspokenly atheistic, and Sri Siddhanta Saraswati regularly and fearlessly opposed him. In 1892, the Pandit and others, including Mahesh Chandra Nayan Ratna, the head of the college, proposed revision of the astrological calendar. Sri Siddhanta Saraswati pointed out several mathematical and technical discrepancies in their arguments. One of his pupils published a tract showing conclusively the inaccuracies of the reformers, that the matter rested on the precision of the equinox, which in Vedic astronomy is made from a fixed point of the zodiac. Much discomfited by the sudden rise of the youthful Siddhanta Saraswati, the Pandit became openly critical of him and his students. Tension simmered until eventually the college principal convened and presided over a debate to resolve the issue. Sri Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati easily met the various challenges posed by the Pandit and moreover unplushed him by posing further questions, which Sri Siddhanta Saraswati himself then answered. But when Sri Siddhanta Saraswati tangled directly with the college principal, he became obliged to quit college. In 1895, and although in an era such an act was practically unheard of and deemed disgraceful, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati had another outlook. This was his outlook, quote, "Considering that if I were to remain studying diligently at college, I would be browbeaten to enter family life. But if I were perceived as a foolish, good-for-nothing, then no one would put such an inducement upon me for becoming engaged in worldly advancement. I left a Sanskrit college, and to maintain my life for service to Hari, I sought an honest occupation with a modest income." So those are just some things in the early life. There's much, much more, and very difficult to read everything. But throughout this book, I was reading that in after leaving this school, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj, he would actually serve the different kings in his particular, I don't remember the names, but they were kings, and he would serve them. And he would teach their children different things on Vaishnav culture and history. And eventually, after doing that, he became a sannyasi. The reason I mention this is because Srila Bhaktisiddhanta was very aristocratic. He associated with high aristocracy, kings. So you can imagine being in that court, he had a lot of experience of aristocracy. And he was very well cultured and taught. And this kind of is interesting because we can see that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's take on sannyas was much different in that era than a typical sannyasi. A typical sannyasi in that era would wear just loincloth and an upper garment and a danda and just, you know, carry a pot. That was what a traditional sannyasi was in the renounced order. But Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj, he changed that whole conception of sannyas in terms of appearance. He was an aristocratic sannyasi. He traveled in a car, which was unheard of. In those days, the most materialistic person would have a car, you know, meaning very wealthy, rich, incredibly rich kind of individual would have a vehicle and a driver. And here is Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj, who is a sannyasi, renounced order of life. He had a car and a driver. And not only did he have a driver, but he would be seen going with his household disciples, with the wife in the car, with the husband. And it was a convertible, that's right. Not only was it a car, but it was a convertible. And I remember seeing a documentary one time where they were talking about Mercedes-Benz. And they said that Mercedes-Benz, one of the biggest customers for Mercedes-Benz that made Mercedes-Benz, you know, functional, you know, like rich, were the Indians, the Rajas of India. Some Rajas would have like a dozen Mercedes cars. So it wasn't that it was unusual to have a car in India, but only the big Rajas and kings would actually have a car. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, you can imagine what kind of what he created there, the kind of talk and revolutionary spirit that he had. In fact, it was so revolutionary that we do know that he was commissioned. There were some people commissioned to assassinate Srila Bhaktisiddhanta because he was so revolutionary in his preaching. And it's also said that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj, his presentation of renounced order was not to renounce anything in the material world, but to use it for Krishna's service. That's real renunciation. So he never, you know, he never had anything, although he was a sannyasi, he had no problem being in the association of women, you know, like his disciples. They would be there. He would speak to them. He would give them diksha. And he had no difficulty with that. Other sannyasis, they had so much difficulty, so many problems. They would run away. So his presentation was so revolutionary that it created a lot of enmity, a lot of enemies. And in that way, he preached incredibly powerful in India. For instance, he developed a traveling party, and it was a festival party. And in the festival party, it was incredible what he would do. Most festival parties would just have traditional bhajan. But he would take cinema artists. In other words, you know, he would have a cinema artist on one stage, and then he would have traditional chanting of the holy name on another stage. This was unheard of. And, you know, sometimes here in New Dwarka, we kind of take that principle. We have what you call a rock and roll stage. And then we have like what we consider to be a traditional stage. And Srila Bhattasaranta himself did that. And not only that, but in his particular festival program, like the Festival India, you can actually kind of relate it to that. He would have rides for the kids. He would have like things similar to like a Ferris wheel, where the kids would come there with their parents, and it would be like a fair, F-A-I-R, like a fair. And this is what he would do at the festivals to draw attraction for people to come. And there they would get a dose of Krishna consciousness along with having family activity. So he was very unusual in his activities of spreading Krishna consciousness. But it actually worked. So many thousands of people came. And in the course of it all, he never used anything for his sense gratification. This was the difference between Srila Bhaktisiddhanta and sometimes these so-called sannyasis who were actually sahajiyas, who were actually utilizing their particular dress in order to associate intimately with women and smoke ganja. And this is what they were doing. Whereas he was taking materialism, so-called, and utilizing it for Krishna's service to spread Krishna consciousness. And we see that Srila Prabhupada followed in the same process when he came to the West. He started ashrams. Women could live in the ashram. He initiated women, disciples. He married his disciples. So Srila Prabhupada took the same things that his spiritual master did in order to spread Krishna consciousness in the West. And we can see that it was ingenious on Prabhupada's part, because we know that most of us in the beginning, now maybe it's different, I don't know, but in the beginning, most of us came to Krishna consciousness because we saw beautiful girls, or girls saw beautiful men. It wasn't like a secret. It was known that if you wanted to see a beautiful woman, go to the Krishna temple. And the girls were the most beautiful. Or if you wanted to see a beautiful man who was really, you know, happy, and go to the Krishna temple. This is actually what's happening. And you can even sometimes, like for Rath Yatra festival, after the festival is over, you'll go on the internet and you'll punch in Festival of the Chariots. And there you'll see karmis that took photographs of the festival. And what are the photographs of? All the beautiful ladies that were there. All the devotee girls. I've seen it many times, several times now. I've gotten on. And there you see hundreds and hundreds of photographs. And most of them are of the beautiful girls in Krishna, with their saris. So it's ingenious. And Srila Prabhupada utilized that ingenious nature to attract us to Krishna consciousness. And this is something that his own spiritual master propagated throughout. We'll read a little bit here about Srila Bhaktisiddhanta when he met his Guru Maharaj. Very nice. This is only a couple of pages. Is everybody still hanging in there? Thank you for hanging in there. I know that sometimes it's very difficult. I do know that. I'm trying to make it as, I don't know if I should use the word exciting, but at least as informative as I can. Gorkhasur Das Babaji had been performing bhajan for many years in Vrindavan. He was extremely renounced and was a disciple of Bhagavan Das Babaji, the disciple of Jagannath Das Babaji. He was not well educated and had been a grain merchant in his previous existence, but it was widely known that he was a liberated Paramahamsa of the highest caliber in the area of Vraja Mandala. At the time of his arrival, going to Bhaktivinoda's house, he would usually go to Bhaktivinoda's house, and he came one time. And upon his arrival, he was wearing a cap made of tiger skin and was carrying a basket of various items and materials for his service. He spotted Siddhanta Sarasvati and offered him 4 or 5 pieces of knotted rope for chanting rounds, a tilak stamp with the initials for Hare Krishna, the tiger skin cap and paraphernalia for worship. This is what he gave to Srila Bhakti Siddhanta in this particular visit. Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj had received the basket and cap from his spiritual master. It's pretty funny. It was a tiger skin cap. Bhagavat Das Babaji is who gave it to him. Siddhanta Sarasvati was very attracted to Gaurakishore Das Babaji's lotus feet at first sight. He was later to comment with great humility. This is Srila Bhaktisiddhanta saying, I have been busy within the material world trying to bring sense gratification within the grasp of my hand. I have often thought that by obtaining the objects of sense gratification, all my shortcomings will be fulfilled. I often attained different facets that were indeed very rare, but my own personal shortcomings were never mitigated. In this material world, I have had the association of very high-class aristocratic persons. However, seeing their various deficiencies, I could not offer them praise. The most merciful Supreme Lord, Sri Gaurasundar, seeing me in such a lamentable condition at a time of adversity, gave permission to his two dear most devotees, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Srila Gaurakishore Das Babaji, to grant me their blessings. Because I was always intoxicated with a worldly false ego, wanting again and again self-appraisal, I deprived myself of my own real benefit. But because of the influence of my previous births, activities in devotional service, I came into the association of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who was the form of my spiritual well-wisher. My spiritual master, Srila Gaurakishore Das Babaji, would go and visit Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur and many times would reside with him. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, out of his compassion for other living entities, pointed out my spiritual master, Srila Gaurakishore Das Babaji. Upon seeing my spiritual master, the extent of my worldly false ego diminished. I knew that all the other living entities who have taken the human form of life were also fallen and low like myself. But by gradually observing the spiritual character of my master, I realized that only a Vaishnava could reside in this material world and be of exemplary character. Okay, just another few paragraphs. At Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's urging, the young man approached Srila Gaurakishore Das Babaji for initiation in the month of Magh of the year 1900. Srila Gaurakishore Das Babaji expressed reluctance to accept him, knowing Siddhanta Sarasvati to be a great scholar. Finally, when Siddhanta Sarasvati pleaded with him for initiation, Gaurakishore Das Babaji replied, quote, Mahabhubhu will be asked. If he gives permission, your desire will be fulfilled. End of quote. On another day, Siddhanta Sarasvati approached him again and asked, what was Mahaprabhu's order? Gaurakishore Das Babaji replied, I forgot to ask. The third time Babaji Maharaj was requested, he replied, I asked. I did not receive the command of Mahaprabhu. End of quote. Siddhanta Sarasvati then stood up, his heart breaking, and said, you, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Srila Gaurakishore Das Babaji, are both worshippers of Krishna, the crest jewel of debauchees. Therefore, why will you take mercy on someone dedicated to ordinary morality like me? So he was kind of like lamenting. In his pastimes, as the exemplary teacher, Mahaprabhu has given instructions on the worship of Krishna, the crest jewel of debauchees. Therefore, why will he give the command to take mercy on me? But karuna na hoile, kandiya kandiya prana na rakhibe ara. If there is no mercy, weeping and weeping, I can sustain my life no more. If I do not receive your mercy, I do not see any need in holding on to life. After thus indicating his readiness to take his life, Siddhanta Saraswati began to cry. Srila Gaurakishordas Babaji's heart was melted to see this. So he told him to take bath in the Saraswati and then come back to him. At the time of initiation, he gave Siddhanta Saraswati the name Sri Varshabhanavi Devi Daita Das. This pastime bears a striking resemblance to the relationship between Nartam Das Thakur and Lokanath Das Goswami, who was also an extremely humble and renounced Paramahamsa, who was reluctant to take any disciples, considering himself unqualified, but finally accepted Nartam Das Thakur as his only disciple. It shows how eager and determined one must be to get the mercy of a pure devotee of Krishna. Okay, so I'll just read a little bit more, maybe 10, 15 minutes more. And we'll read about Srila Prabhupada beating his spiritual master, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj. So we know that Srila Prabhupada, he was urged by his friend, Mulik, Narayan Mulik, to come and meet Srila Prabhupada at a gathering. And Srila Prabhupada was reluctant. He didn't really want to go because he had seen and heard so many saints and sadhus previously, and he was never satisfied by that association. So he was really reluctant. But anyway, he did go because Mulik was his best friend. So Narin encouraged him. So when they met, when Srila Prabhupada saw Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, at first sight, he became very attracted and thought maybe this was a great, great personality. And so he became very attracted to hear. So we'll read about that. Sitting with his back very straight, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati appeared tall. He was slender, his arms were long, and his complexion was fair and golden. He wore round bifocals with simple frames. His nose was sharp, his forehead broad, and his expression was very scholarly, yet not at all timid. The vertical markings of Vaishnav Tilak on his forehead were familiar to Srila Prabhupada, as were the simple sannyas robes that draped over his right shoulder, leaving the other shoulder and half his chest bare. He wore tilak neck beads, and the clay Vaishnav markings of tilak were visible at his throat, shoulder, and upper arms. A clean white brahminical thread was looped around his neck and draped across his chest. Srila Prabhupada and Arin, having both been raised in Vaishnav families, immediately offered prostrated obeisances at the sight of the revered sannyasi. Srila Prabhupada could hardly believe what he had just heard. They had not even exchanged views, yet this sadhu was telling them what they should be doing. Sitting face to face with Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, Prabhupada was gathering his wits and trying to gain a comprehensible impression. But this person had already told them to become preachers and go all over the world. Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj's comment was, "You are educated young men. Why don't you preach Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's message throughout the whole world?" So this really startled Srila Prabhupada, as you see. Srila Prabhupada was immediately impressed, but he wasn't going to drop his intelligent skepticism. After all, there were assumptions in what the sadhu had said. Srila Prabhupada had already announced himself by his dress to be a follower of Gandhi, and he felt the impulse to raise an argument. Yet as he continued to listen to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta speak, he also began to feel won over by the sadhu's strength of conviction. He could sense that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta didn't care for anything but Lord Chaitanya, and that this is what made him great. This was why followers had gathered around him, and why Srila Prabhupada himself felt drawn, inspired, and humbled, and wanted to hear more. But he felt obliged to make an argument, to test the truth. Drawn irresistibly into discussion, Srila Prabhupada spoke up in in answer to the words Srila Bhaktisiddhanta had so tersely spoken in the first seconds of their meeting. "Who will hear your Chaitanya's message?" Srila Prabhupada answered. "We are a dependent country. First, India must become independent. How can we spread Indian culture if we are under British rule?" Srila Prabhupada had asked haughtily, just to be provocative, yet his question was clearly a challenge. If he were to take this sadhu's remark to them as a serious one, and there was nothing in Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's demeanor to indicate that he had not been serious, Srila Prabhupada felt compelled to question how he could propose such a thing while India was still dependent. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta replied in a quiet, deep voice that Krishna consciousness didn't have to wait for a change in Indian politics, nor was it dependent on who ruled. Krishna consciousness was so important, so exclusively important, that it could not wait. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta continued, "Whether one power or another ruled was a temporary situation, but the eternal reality is Krishna consciousness, and the real self is the spirit soul. No man-made political system, therefore, could actually help humanity. This was the verdict of the Vedic scriptures and the line of spiritual masters. Although everyone is an eternal servant of God, when one takes himself to be the temporary body and regards the nation of his birth as worshipable, he comes under the illusion. The leaders and followers of the world's political movements, including the movement for Swaraj, were simply cultivating this illusion. Real welfare work, whether individual, social, or political, should help prepare a person for his next life and help him reestablish his eternal relationship with the Supreme." So, as we can read here, this was the beginning of the historical beginning of the Hare Krishna movement in the Western world. Srila Prabhupada accepted his Guru Maharaj's conviction and came under his instruction to the Western world to preach Krishna consciousness. And as we know, from there, it's history. We're here today living that history of the instruction given to him that one very beautiful night when Prabhupada met his spiritual master. And we can see that those devotees that met Srila Prabhupada immediately took up this mission. Some devotees gave everything they had. Although they may not be here today, they did help Srila Prabhupada in his mission in all kinds of ways in spreading the message. So, again, as we started saying that faith is such an important ingredient in the association of the spiritual master, we have to have faith in that instruction. And if we have that faith, then so many wonderful things can happen. And Srila Prabhupada himself, from that faith, he actually was a married man. Most of you know Prabhupada was married. He had children. And even in the very beginning when he met his spiritual master, he even after a certain amount of time, he began thinking about taking sannyas. But he knew that culturally that it wasn't appropriate since he was married and he had children. So he wanted to wait some time before he took the sannyas order. But then eventually he did take sannyas, just like his spiritual master, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. He took sannyas at age 40, but he was about like 40, 44, like that. He took sannyas, and Prabhupada took sannyas also, something in the 50s, early 50s, to spread the message. He did so many wonderful things in order to give us an opportunity to come to Krishna consciousness. And we see that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj, he was such a wonderful soul, such a great soul, that he was able to give us Srila Prabhupada. You know, it was by his mercy that we have Srila Prabhupada with us today in reading his teachings and following his instructions and trying to spread this message. So, does anybody else like to say anything? There are different pastimes of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. Maybe somebody would like to say something. Satchitanoi Prabhu, do you have anything I say? You didn't raise your hand? Jai. Well, you can think about it for a moment.
There's one past time that I can remember that, because we were talking about the boldness of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, his character, since
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, right. Another historical event was that, Srila Prabhupada didn't have very much association with his spiritual master. And the few times that he did, they were very notable. One of them was in 1935, and they were, Bhatta Siddhanta Maharaj was having programs. And in 1935, he met his spiritual master, Radhakund, and they had a nice talk there for a few moments. We have a BBT painting of that event. Prabhupada's with his young son, and they were standing at the Radhakund, and there Srila Prabhupada asked his spiritual master, "How can I please you? How can I serve you?" And there Srila Bhatta Siddhanta Maharaj told Srila Prabhupada that you should go to the West and preach this science of Krishna consciousness. So it's a very notable pastime, and there Srila Prabhupada accepted that instruction. And then once again he got that instruction just before the passing of Srila Bhatta Siddhanta, and in a letter, he received a letter, and there Srila Bhatta Siddhanta Maharaj again told Srila Prabhupada he should go west and preach this message of Krishna consciousness. So, very notable pastimes. Dhruta Karma Prabhu, would you like that? Yeah.
So that rooftop, that house is still there.
Wow. Yeah, I heard that too.
Which is, really a powerful place.
Yes.
To go there. But this is where it all started, on this rooftop. Srila Prabhupada was getting some instruction from Bhakti Siddhanta.
Nice. Yeah, very amazing, very powerful. Anyone else? Yes. Yeah.
So, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and other Swami Maharajas, they repeat so many Maya Vadis philosophies. But sometimes it is quoted that, like, looking at Maya Vadis is great sin, and you need to go to Ganges and take back. So, can you crack a little bit, like, without even looking at the Maya Vadis, you cannot defeat it? So,
you mean running away from them or getting purified?
Yes.
Well, there's a story that Prabhupada has given about one mercantile man who, the Nawab? Yeah, the Nawab. When the Nawab of Bengal was a young man, he was under the protection of a Hindu businessman. And in the course of raising the Nawab, he would beat him and he would whip him because of some bad behavior. So when the Nawab became an adult, he actually became the king, you know, of that area, Bengal somewhere. And one day the queen saw that the Nawab had his whip marks on the back of his. She asked, "Well, who did this? How dare someone do this to you?" So he explained that it was this, you know, a Hindu businessman that was protecting him, raised him, and educated him. And she's, and the queen said, "You should kill him immediately. Immediately he should be killed." And the Nawab, he said, no, I can't, because he's you know, very dear to me. He raised me. I'm what I am today is because of him." And so she said, no, you must kill him. So finally he just said to her, "Well, let me just make him a Muslim." So he went to this Hindu businessman, and it's known in those days all they had to do is just sprinkle water on them. You know, the Nawab, whatever touched his lips, whatever lips, you know, touched the water, they could take that water and sprinkle it on him, and he would be now a Muslim, an outcast in Hindu society. So he did that. He said, "I will do that." So they commissioned this Indian man, or this Hindu man, to come. He came to the court, and there the Nawab drank some water and then took the rest and sprinkled it on him. And this Hindu became extremely distraught. Now he was going to lose everything. You know, everything's gone. He's now no longer a Hindu. He was now a Muslim. And this to him was worse than death. So he went to some Brahmins and asked, "How can I become purified? What can I do to get rid of this? What can I atone?" And they said to him, "Well, you have to drink like boiling hot ghee." I think they told him, "Drink a gallon of boiling ghee." And he said, "Simpa, I'll die." He said, "This is what you have to do." So he went to some other Brahmins, priests, and they said, "No, you must drink molten lead." And then that was ridiculous. So finally, by Krishna's mercy, he met Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told him, he said, "The atonement is simply chant the holy name. Chant the holy name of Krishna. Go to Vrindavan, sit there, chant the holy name, and worship the Supreme Lord. This is sufficient atonement for your life." So for us, you know, we hear all this, jump in the river and the Ganga. Really for us, all we really need to do is just chant the holy name. Just chant sincerely with real devotion and love. And this is the real atonement in life, in all activities. Even if we kill a brahmana, the atonement is to chant the holy name of the Lord. So this is what we're doing. And I guess we may see a Mayavadi or whatever. Just chant Hare Krishna and everything's okay. Is that okay? Yeah.
The poor man is the analogy that is looking for the treasure that the father left. He's describing in one section that it's like a serpent that swallows.
Yeah. That's right, that's it.
So that's my Mayavadi philosophy. And Prabhupada communicated to us that constantly teaching about Mayavadi, that we all have Mayavadi philosophy is also just outside that we have.
Yeah. Our instruction should be, don't even talk to him. Don't even, if you hear that, immediately just leave that place and chant the holy name. Anybody else like to say anything? Should we spend just about 5 minutes to announce some book scores? Just a few, just 5 minutes will take, just announce them. Won't go through it a lot, but, you know, there'll be some nice things that we can just say. So we have like 2012 results. So this year, and we were 5% less in donations to, well, in I'm not sure what this is. I'm a little confused myself on this thing, actually. But what I should say is that we were able to increase our book distribution this year. Our book points were a 20% increase of 145,114 book points, which is really cool. We distributed a total of 160,578 total literatures. We really increased a lot on the Maha Big books. Last year, in 2011, we did 30,000 Maha Big. This year, we did 48,000 Maha Big books. Wow. That was very, very good, very good. And so our Sankirtan collection for the year was 210,000 Lakshmi points, which is pretty darn good. And we're thinking that, of course, it's not the end of it yet. We still have a few more days. But right now, the temple will be giving to the BBT about $217,000 for the BBT. That is about a 15% increase over last year. It's very significant. What's interesting is that throughout, like last January when we had meetings in Dallas, we had requested that all the temples come together and conjointly increase book distribution in America. And all the temple presidents there vowed to increase by 20% their particular remittance to the BBT. And it was really a nice hyped-up scenario, situation. Everybody was really on board and very excited, and everybody was really enthusiastic to go back and through the whole year of 2012 and increase their book distribution. So, of course, in New Dwarka's terms, we didn't make it. We were 5% short, but still the amount that we gave was, you know, very significant comparative to other temples. But what was really glorious was that not only did America achieve the 20% increase, but it almost achieved a 29% increase instead. It was a significant, huge. It was a big howdy bowl. Yeah. I think one of the really wonderful aspects of this was that in the U.S. today, you know, we don't really have like a dominant, you know, spiritual master. Like in India, there's several dominant spiritual masters. And by their pushing, you know, their disciples, they do huge, huge, like Gopal Krishna Maharaj. Everybody knows that he's totally into book distribution. And it's exhibited by the number of books that they distribute. And what they do in India is phenomenal. It'll probably never be replicated. It's so huge. But in America, what was really great was that everybody came together. There's no real big, you might say, big gun in the U.S. We have ours in Vaisheshika Prabhu. He's an initiating spiritual master who is very dedicated to book distribution. And we see that he goes and travels to different temples in America, and by his enthusiasm and training and motivation, several temples have reaped the benefits and just surpassed their goal tremendously. Like, he's been really responsible a lot for Laguna Beach, and they doubled, and he also helped Toronto, Washington, D.C., several different temples, which are off the charts in terms of what they were doing last year as compared to this year. So we do have his association and his enthusiasm. But what was really cool was that all the leadership in America came together as a team. And all of us came together and really tried to press this idea of reviving book distribution in a team spirit, team effort. And it really worked. It's very glorious. And I think that whenever this kind of thing happens, there's also a controversy that needs to happen in order for us to come together. And the controversy really was the Turley case. The Turley case was a real black eye, a really deep wound in America. And it was so deep that the temples, unless we came together and were able to produce about like $9 million. America alone had to come together and produce $9 million for the Turley case. And literally, you can see most of America in temples. We were like broke. How were we going to do it? But it took 5 years, and the temples came together and were able to help each other and acquire that amount of money. And we were able to surpass the Turley case because of this. So and ultimately, the amount that was gotten together was $15 million from America alone in order to take care of the Turley case. And I think that controversy itself helped all of us come together. And now we're going to use that same enthusiasm to distribute Prabhupada's books. Yes, very nice. And it's proven here that we thought when we were saying this, the 20%, everybody goes, oh my God, that's impossible. That's insurmountable. This is what we were thinking when we were saying this. Vaisheshi Kapu and myself were just giving a little presentation, and he just shouted out, okay, 20%. And everybody just, no, it was quiet. Nobody said anything. Nobody volunteered to say a word. But he just kept saying, 20%, 20%. So finally everybody agreed. And you can see the result of it. It was 29% practically. So next year we want to also increase again. And in that way, please Srila Prabhupada. And, you know, the marathon is really ecstatic. I do know that in San Jose, they achieved their goal of 16,108 Bhagavad Gitas. Bravo! Yeah. They're very good. Amazing feat. And we learned something from that, that if we educate our congregation, that education means that they'll understand the importance of book distribution, and the sponsorships will be fantastic. Isn't it? That's what it's all about, the sponsorship. So we even experienced that here in New Dwarka. We just took what San Jose was doing in the Motel Gita program. We just took that idea and we try to get people to sponsor. And here we have Shastra Kripabhu, who has really become expert at Shastra sponsorship. Yeah, very nice. So here we were for the Christmas marathon, we were very fortunate. The gift shop sponsored like $25,000 for book distribution for the month of December alone. Yeah. Which is really ecstatic. And for the year, the gift shop and the buffet, they both helped out. It was like over $200,000 to the temple in order for us to be able to go out and preach and distribute Prabhupada's books. So we're very fortunate to have this kind of situation here. And we also found that during the Christmas marathon, we had so many wonderful people that gave contributions, you know, towards that. Do we have time? Maybe I can just for a few minutes just announce those people that gave donations, sponsored. It was incredible, the amount of people. Of course, there was like Jai Krishna Patel, yes, Nakatma Prabhu, and the Bari family, Rahul and Supriya, Pavaka Dasi, we have Santa Sri Shirkar, Nikifora family, Laglu Bhagavatam Rita, Ramesh and Saroj Soni, Darlene Hausman, Sumat Patel, we have Ishikil Jagannath, Roma Ghosh, Krishna Lal. We had Lakshmi Nikki. Okay, we had that. Robert Kessler, Balai Dasi. And we had Sri Lalita, Pavani Magendra, Amala Bhakta Prabhu, Ranadir Prabhu, Advaita Chandra Prabhu, Dutta Karma Prabhu, Bhakti Sani, his father. And we had Mahameda and Vishalaksha. We had Shamarupa and Ananya, Radhika. We had Advaita Chandra and Sita Takarani, Sumat Patel, Tim Burleson, Suresh Bhatti, Hari Gupta, M.J. Savani, and Radha Prem and Maturanath, Kadamba Devidasi, Sujana Devidasi and Maharaj Das, Manohar Bakru, Ananta Rupa Das, Sri Lakshmi Kuchimanchi, Vishal Bamba, Subo Krishna Chaudan, and we had Satya Rajeshu Subramanya, and we had Rodney Bowles. We had Best Western Hotel. We had Krishna Lal again, and we had Aruloli Rajaram, Satya Vashishta. We had Nagapatni Dasi, Govinda Dat Prabhu, and Leroy Thomas. We had Ravi and Sangeeta Wahi, Dr. Nanda, Amit Godbole, Pushkar Chan, Jyoti Amin, Gonzalo Aguilar, Putam Ram, Ratnadeep Upadhyay, Vivek Tao, Mark Goodman, Narayani Dasi, Vipul Josi, Gorang, and Hansa Chaurushya. One more page. Thank you. Galindi Gandhi, and we had the Vijaz family, Mahesh Butla, Peggy Ordonez, Emily Penny, we have Ravi Kiran, Ashokam Devarajan, Ajay Nandwani, and Sudeep Chandra Bharti, Tahol Pancham, Ramesh Lagumavarupa. I'm sorry that if I'm really killing these names. I apologize. And we have Gopal and Karuna Lala, and we have Ramkrishna Kanpur, Kamal Mehta, which is Krishna Prema Prabhu, Howard and Bina Hong, Sandeep Putran, John Maidan, and the Parekh family. So the total of these contributions, and it's just what I have here. I know we're missing some more from Shastra Krip, but just those families alone, and individuals, they gave $23,000 for the Christmas marathon. So we discovered a new item this year, sponsorship. So we'd like to focus on that in the years to come, because the sponsorship is wonderful. If we educate our congregation about the importance of book distribution, I'm sure that will increase. This is a way to increase Sankirtan, book distribution. Because sometimes it's very difficult these days to have enough devotees in a temple that can actually go out and distribute these books at such large quantities. But if we have sponsors, it makes it much more possible to be able to accomplish that. And this is the way we can increase book distribution. Jai. Okay, so what should I do here? I have two items. I have, let me just read at least the results of the Prabhupada Marathon. So, the Prabhupada Marathon, we had a lot of devotees that went out. Bhakti and Emily, Sarvaboma, Tattvavit, Shamapriya, Narayani, Mayapur Shashi, Naikatma, Radha Kripa Kataksha. We had our team, Nudwarka, Krishnapad, Govindadad, Acharyanartham, Bhakti Ingunita, Shamadasi, Veda, Advaita Chandra, Karuna Darini, Vanabhata, Bhagavat, Savas, and Tadit, Temple Bhajan Band, Bhakti Brian, Vijay, Shantatma, Bhakti Eric, Satyadulal, Gauda Chandra, Yasudev, Radharani Dasi, Satyatanoi, Prem Sankirtan, Vrigupati. We had Shastakrit, and miscellaneous devotees. There were so many. But for the marathon alone, we did 372 magazines, 3,336 small, 1,203 medium, 2,122 big, and I'm not sure what figure is missing there. I think it might be 23,917 Maha Big Books. Pretty bold. And that total for these devotees, just the total for that was 53,200 Lakshmi points. So there's still more to come, and we'll try to announce that in the next day or so, what the final results are. But these are just some of the things I'd like to just announce. Another nice thing was that we did have we have one family that does the temple, I guess you might call it Shastra Dan program, and that's Advaita Chandra and his wife Sita Takarani. So, you know, usually we like to announce because they are very dedicated to this Shastra Dan program. We give them books on a biweekly program. And for the, I think it was for the year, they distributed 6,364 small, 3,516 medium, 24 big, and I think I missed the... here it is. Sorry, wrong page. Altogether, they did 2,343 books. So they had 576 small, 420 medium, two sets of Bhagavatams, and 1,603 Maha Big books. Yes. Okay, so we'll try to say some more things in a couple of days when we get the actual results in. Okay? Jai. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srila Bhakta Saranta Maharaj ki jai.